Hello, everyone, and welcome to the debut episode of Locked On Cavaliers, the official Cleveland Cavaliers podcast of the Locked On Sports Network, which is run by Utah Jazz play-by-play man David Locke. Before we get into things, I'm really proud to have been asked to host this podcast. There's a lot of really other talented people in this network. Sean Hyken over at Locked On Bulls, Jared Dubin at Locked On Knicks, Wes Goldberg at Locked On Heat. I could go on and on. There's a ton of talented people. I'm not naming people, but it's no slight. They're all super talented, and I'm really, really honored to host the Cavs podcast in this network. If you don't know who I am, I'm an editor at Fear the Sword, which is SB Nation's Cleveland Cavaliers blog. I am a staff writer at Hardwood Paroxysm, which is a very good basketball site in the FanSided network, and I've written for FanSided. I've written for The Classical, some other places. And this is the first time I've really hosted a podcast on my own. It's exciting. I've been on podcasts before. I've done them as one-offs, but I'm really excited to take a stab at hosting my own. And it's about a team I've covered for a while. I grew up watching as a kid in Cleveland, and I'll be covering in person when the fall comes for Fear the Sword, but that's a while away because we're still in title glow season for everyone in Cleveland. But I'm really excited. You can find us on Audio Boom. We will be on iTunes and Stitcher in the near future if you prefer those avenues instead of just listening on Audio Boom. Those links are going to Twitter, which is at Locked On Cavs. If you have questions or you want to offer critiques on the podcast, you can email us at lockedoncavs@gmail.com. And this will all be on our Twitter. I'll be on our Audio Boom page, and I'll tweet this out on my own personal account, which is at CWMWrites. And also follow Fear the Sword at Fear the Sword. I'm biased, but we are the best Cavs blog on the internet. And that is also where the podcast will be hosted. Because this is the first episode, I wanted to have a very special guest. It's someone who I've worked with for, I think it's been almost 2 years now. He's been a really great mentor, a really good friend, and he's one of the, if you don't follow him on Twitter, you don't really know Cavs Twitter, and that is none other than David Zavok, the manager of Fear the Sword. David, you've been kind enough to take time away tonight from studying from the bar. How are you doing tonight?
Good. I just did a practice quiz and did reasonably well, so good mood over here.
Yeah. Before we get into some of the more timely Cavs topics, you've covered the Cavs longer than me, I think. And you were at Fear the Sword under Conrad Kazmarek, who ran the site before you. You were covering them at a very high level when they had, some really, really bad teams. Has it really sunk in you yet? Because it at least hasn't for me, that the Cavs actually won a title in June. Because I still really kind of can't believe it.
Yes and no. You reference following the team when they weren't very good, and the only thing I can really say is it's just so cool that Kyrie and Tristan Thompson were a big part of it, because when you cover a bad team with young players, you just hope that that it'll pay off at some point down the line. And I think I saw something that the last two number one picks to win a title with the team that drafted them are LeBron James and Kyrie Irving. So, when you're a lottery team, it's not easy to stay optimistic, especially when you're in a small market. And for years, I just worried that the Cavs would sort of be a farm system for other teams, that, Kyrie would go somewhere else and do good things. But it's pretty cool that LeBron came back. And obviously, when you have LeBron, your team's going to be very good. But that there were at least a couple guys that had important roles that were there when they were bad has just been really cool.
Yeah. You were, you also got to go downtown. I was at work, unfortunately, but you got to go downtown and be at the parade. And some of the photos I saw, it Ertis Byner walking around, which is super bizarre. You had just so many people there. What was it like being at that parade?
It was a long day. We got down there at like 8:30 in the morning, and we were at a pretty early spot in the parade, and the players didn't really start going by us for like 4.5 hours. It's cool that so many people were there, but it also made it very difficult to eat. So, by the time 4 o'clock comes around, you really haven't been able to eat anything. you're getting a little cranky, but seeing everybody there was really cool. You could see that Kyrie was really overwhelmed by the amount of people that were there. J.R. Smith was obviously loving the moment, and he was really cool.
It's an understatement.
But, you know, so many people there. One of the things I like about the NBA in general is it has a really diverse fan base, and you could 100% see that in Cleveland that day. People from every single walk of life, and everybody was happy, and everybody was happy about the Cavs.
Yeah, it was a really cool day. Everything I saw was just unbelievable, and LeBron's speech was great. I mean, he seemed so relaxed for the first time, I think, since he came back to Cleveland. So, I mean, and just think about some of the guys that were, I mean, that was the last time Deli, Mozgov, Sasha, shout out to Sasha Khan, like all those guys were together for that one last time. So that was a super cool moment. But it's been, I mean, about almost a month now, if not a month. And it's, so the Cavs have sort of changed. They've made some roster moves. Sasha Khan, as I alluded to, is gone. You know, they, Matthew Dellavedova is now as a member of the Milwaukee Bucks. They got Mike Dunleavy. You know, they're going to sign Chris Berman Anderson soon. We'll talk about all those things, but the guy I want to start with is the shirtless wonder himself, J.R. Smith. You know, there's some numbers being thrown out there that he's looking for $15 million a year. He said publicly that he's nervous about his free agency decision. And tell me if I'm wrong here, Dave, but I kind of think if a team was going to throw a bunch of money at J.R., it would have already happened.
Yeah, I mean, there's you know, teams, the one team I thought really should have considered him was the Memphis Grizzlies.
Yeah, I like that.
Because they obviously need the shooting, and I think they've done some really good things in the offseason. But they also have a really strong core there with Zach Randolph and Mike Conley and Marc Gasol, and even Tony Allen, in terms of there's a lot of different personalities there, but they all show up to work and play. And I thought JR, you know, if there was a team that was going to step in and really go after him, you know, that was going to be it. But it's so hard to project what he looks like. Well, actually, it's not very difficult. I was going to say, it's hard to project what he looks like when LeBron James isn't playing right next to him.
Yeah,
but it's actually very easy because you have a lot of years of mediocre to, frankly, not good play.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been outstanding since he came to Cleveland. And in Cleveland, he's a high quality player, and he's a starter, and he's a guy that should be getting, you know, $18 million a year in this market. But he went 5 days without the, you know, 5 days after the championship without a shirt on, right? And that's really funny. But if you're the GM of another team, you know, and I think a lot of these guys are conservative dispositionally, you know, you're going to say, am I really going to roll the dice on big money on a guy like J.R. Smith? And I think the answer has been no.
Yeah.
One of my favorite things was, like, in the midst of 4 days of, like, JR showing up in public without a shirt on, there was, like, one Instagram post where he, like, was at the Cleveland Clinic courts, and it was just him with, like, his shoes on, and it said, like, never stop working. And it was just, like, a clear, all right, my agent's making me do this to show that I you know, I still have my head on straight. But
shout out to Rich Paul, man. Shout out to Clutch Sports.
Right, yeah, the Rich Paul effect. Now, I don't say this because I don't like J.R. Smith. I'm just saying I understand why a 60-year-old general manager of the NBA doesn't want to risk a season, a guaranteed deal on a player like him. And so far, it doesn't look like anybody has.
No, I mean, I think that's the point. I think it's funny you mentioned Memphis because I don't know if you listened to this, but Nate Duncan, the Dunked On podcast, did an off-season preview, and the Grizzlies were the team that forced the Cavs in that mock situation into a huge bidding war to keep JR, and I think he ended up with $18 or $19 million. And then, you know, but you look at Memphis, you know, they chose to spend that money on Chandler Parsons. And I like Chandler Parsons a lot, and I think he's actually a really, really nice fit there for a lot of reasons. But it didn't, you know, you spend your money on Chandler Parsons because you know what you're getting. And yeah, he has the knee issues, but he's a very marketable guy. He's a potential star player. He recruits guys well for the future. And he's, you know, he can do some a little bit more than Jair on the court, I would argue. But yeah, Memphis made sense. I was hoping the Kings were just going to be the Kings and throw like a ton of money at him because it would have just been funny, but that hasn't happened. But we'll see. I think it's inevitable that he's back in Cleveland. I don't really know what the holdup is. I would bet you it's JR looking for his big payday and trying to get it, but he doesn't have leverage right now. His only leverage is that the Cavs can't replace him. The Cavs, because of their cap situation and because they have his bird rights and can pay him more, they don't have the ability to go out and sign a guy that can replace Jarrett Smith, especially under the salary cap. They'd probably have to turn his minutes over to Jordan McRae and hope Amon Shumpert's shot finds itself again, which, you know, I don't know if that's a bet you want to take. What do you think JR ends up signing for? For how long? And when do you think it happens? Just, I know you don't have sources or anything, but just a full hypothetical guess.
Yeah, I would say, you know, we're probably looking at something like 3 years, $40 to $42 million. You know, there was a report out there that he wants 15. It's kind of a situation like Tristan Thompson was in last year, where you have, you know, the Cavs cannot replace him. It's different in terms of Tristan was restricted, so he sort of had an excuse for, you know, Tristan didn't even want to sign with another team because then it meant less guaranteed money. Mm-hmm. And you know, that was sort of lost on a lot of people. But JR doesn't have that excuse, and you're right, there doesn't seem to be a market elsewhere. However, you know, then you said it there. Do the Cavs want to go into the season with Amon Shumpert as your starting point guard or as your starting shooting guard? And then, you know, you're sort of asking Jordan McRae to do some things. I don't think that they want that. And also, the Cavs with Tristan Thompson knew he was going to be working his tail off because that's what Tristan Thompson does. Mm-hmm. And they don't have really have that with J.R. Smith. So, and then you've got the LeBron factor hanging over everything, right? So yeah. LeBron still hasn't re-signed, even though he's said that he's going to. So, I think, you know, LeBron would re-sign before JR does. If I'm the Cavs, I don't want it stretching into October like Tristan's did because you have less control over JR than you did over Tristan, just in terms of knowing what type of work he's going to be putting in the offseason. So, you know, my official guess, I'll say 3 and 41, and let's say he signs it mid-August. Why not?
Yeah, I mean, I think he signed up September last year, so I think it could be a little bit. I mean, and I think you're right. JR's the guy who, when he was profiled by GQ, literally said on record that he would live in Ohio year round if weed was legal. And I was like, okay, JR, like you gotta pick your spots, bud. But I agree with you. I think 3/32 sounds reasonable. I'm also gonna say mid to late August, and I think you know he'll get a team option the last year. Partially guaranteed that last year, so if it gets bad, they can kind of move on from him. And I think the other thing here, and we'll talk about him next, Mike Dunleavy's back is sort of a question mark. I don't know how healthy it is. He missed a lot of last year, and he played at the end of the year and stuff, but you just don't really know at his age, and back injuries are tricky. You'd be putting a lot of faith in him to kind of replay some of those minutes. But what are you expecting out of Dunleavy?
A lot. Actually, I like the way that he plays, and I like that the Cavs are, you know, going to be able to ask him to only do 15 to 18 minutes a game. You know, you can play him with Richard Jefferson.
Yes.
If you have Amon Shumpert on the floor, and if you have LeBron on the floor, I think. But, you know, I think it was Brian Windhorst who said Dunleavy is sort of insurance for Richard Jefferson. I'd probably flip it and say that Richard Jefferson is insurance for Dunleavy. I just trust Dunleavy's shooting a little bit more than Jefferson's. I'm not sure how much more defense Jefferson gives you. I was really excited about it. I know it's probably silly, and he does have a tendency to get injured, but he's a smart guy that'll move the ball around. He's so dangerous as a trailer in transition, and the Cavs don't get out and run that much, but you know, LeBron is so good at finding guys on the perimeter, and Dunleavy is so good at finding space that I could see those guys really developing some chemistry on a second unit. And he's also a guy that, you know, feels like he could be good at getting Kevin Love involved as well.
I think when I think of Dunleavy, I'm pretty excited, and maybe not as excited as you about him, but I think he's a guy, when you mentioned him and Jefferson, I like that idea. I mean, maybe the bench you did this year with some of the roster changes is you go LeBron obviously kind of orchestrating things, and you have Shumpert guarding point guards, you have Dunleavy, Richard Jefferson, and you have Channing Frye, and you just space the floor and you kind of run with that. And, you know, at that point, if Shumpert's the worst shooter on the floor, that's not ideal necessarily. But, you know, maybe he improves next year and it becomes workable. So it's definitely a little bit longer than you would have if it was Shump and Deli, and I think that's an improvement. And we kind of dance around LeBron a little bit, but his situation to me is not as – it's fascinating because he's clearly, I think, sort of looking at the Cavs and saying, get JR back. I think that's sort of the move here. I think he's like, take care of JR. He's not in a rush to sign, and I think everyone knows that – he's coming back. I mean, I think Windhorst was the guy who reported that other teams called LeBron and Rich Paul and were like, would you take a meeting? He's like, no. And he's hashtagging his strive for greatness. You know, he Instagrammed another picture of him watching The Godfather after the Warriors got KD. I mean, I think he knows sort of what he's doing. And I think it's just a JR thing. I think it's really him being like, hey, like, take care of JR and then I'll re-sign. Because if it plays out how I think it should, he's going to take another 1-1, and then he's going to get the 5-year max next summer.
But he can't get the 5-year max next summer.
Oh, really? Is it the cap?
As of right now, because of the cap. That 36 and up rule where you can't sign a contract that will take you. Basically, I've said the exact same thing you just said, and then somebody pointed that out to me. So,
So
he would be eligible for a 4-year deal next summer. They're talking about how the, you know, next CBA might do away with that rule. So then maybe he ends up getting that 5 or maybe even a 6-year deal.
Yes,
anyway.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think he will do another 1-1-year deal. I still think he will sign before JR does, just to avoid the appearance of impropriety. But I could 100% be wrong there, because I think a few people have pointed out, you know, just in terms of the way that LeBron celebrated the finals, the way that Dan Gilbert celebrated the finals, those two are still not 100% on the same page.
Yeah, I don't think LeBron, and I don't think he necessarily should be that way, is totally just kind of doing whatever the Cavs need him to do. I think he's doing something that very few pro athletes could do, and is leveraging his situation and his influence and what he is as the defining player of the league into what he wants to do. I personally don't think he's going to sign until after JR does. I think that domino drops with JR, and then I literally think within 48 hours LeBron signs a deal. And I also just think whatever he wants, he's going to go financially. It's going to be like, I would bet you, I don't know this for sure, but my hunch would be that they pretty much know what the deal is going to be already. It's just a matter of LeBron wanting to take the time to sign it. Like, I really think it's just, he doesn't want to deal with it right now. And he just kind of wants to enjoy vacation and kind of leverage the situation. And then when the time comes, he'll sign it. Because I mean, there's literally no scenario to me where the Cavs don't just give him whatever he wants financially. Like, I just don't see it. I mean, I think even when he's older, if he's 36 and he's like, I want a ton of money, I don't know if the Cavs really say no to him. I don't see the Cavs kind of doing what Pat Riley did with D. Wade and kind of trying to lowball him. And after, you know, I just don't see that happening. I personally just think he's going to get paid whatever he wants and for as long as he wants to be in Cleveland.
Yeah. No, I he's going to get paid as long as he wants to. And if he wants to be a member of ownership, eventually he'll be a member of ownership.
Yeah. That wouldn't surprise me if within 3 years of, or even right when he retires, that he gets a big ownership stake and he, you know, is involved, or even involved in the basketball side. I don't know if he'd want to do that, I guess, but I could see it because he does seem to be kind of a guy that watches things, and it's the Michael route. He might do it once and then be like, okay, I don't want to do this because it might not work out or something. But the other,
somebody has to ask him that. I was just thinking about that the other day.
Yeah, like, someone's totally gonna ask him.
I don't know if people have asked him if he wants to be a coach or if he wants to get an ownership. I assume someone has, but I don't remember it, and it seems pretty interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if he'd
not answer, but there you go.
Yeah, I mean, I could totally see a team that's maybe struggling when LeBron retires or just wants that move to be like, hey, we'll give you you know, a big salary and you can come and be our president of operations or something. The thing is, it's like MJ went home. MJ went back to Carolina. Technically, Cleveland would be home for LeBron. Like, that is like his home franchise, and I don't think he's ever going to go back to Miami and work for Pat Riley. Like, I don't ever see that happening. So, I mean, where does he go? I guess, you know, like, what would make him go to, like, you know, like, what would make him go to the Knicks? Like, nothing. There's nothing there for him that is his connection, because the whole time with LeBron, it's always been, where are his friends and where is he comfortable? Miami was the super friends. Cleveland was home. That was the mission. And his, you know, high school, it goes back to high school with him and his friends. I think the underlying thing was always, where are his friends? Which is a very awkward segue into, the Cavs are going to get Chris Birdman Anderson. 1 year minimum deal, played with the Grizzlies last year. He's older. He's another LeBron teammate that's going to play for the Cavs. I personally don't think it's that big of a deal. I mean, you could argue that there are other higher upside options than Birdman. Larry Sanders comes to mind, but he has his own set of issues. But Birdman gives them size that they don't have without Sochakon, without Mozgov. I don't think he plays more than 5-10 minutes a game when he does play, because I think Channing Frye is going to be the backup center. I think Thompson's going to play, you know, a ton of minutes at center. I think Love's going to play minutes at center. We might see some LeBron at the five, which maybe, like, just occasionally. I think that'll happen because I don't think he wants to. But do you have any differing takes on Chris Birdman Anderson becoming a Cavalier?
No, I just think it's a nice, solid pickup. I don't know how much left he really has in the tank, but he's been helpful for teams in short bursts, you know, in at least in the last, you know, 3 years. He can get up and down the floor. He can catch the ball and dunk. He's a pretty good defender. You know, I think when we get to the playoffs, at least, you know, you mentioned LeBron playing the five. I don't think that's something that hopefully will happen until, you know, the Eastern Conference Finals or something like that. But you know, I think for the most part in the playoffs, you're looking at Love, Tristan Thompson, and LeBron James at the four and five spots, and then mixing in some Channing Frye. But if you need to give Birdman 9 or 10 minutes a game in the Eastern Conference Finals, I feel like he could do that and not, you know, completely destroy you. So, you know, I think some people would say, well, it's a roster spot that you're using on not developing a young player. I understand that. But with the position the Cavs are in, I think you mostly want, you know, I think you just want competency.
Yes.
And even if Birdman isn't athletic, as athletic as they want him to be, or as you'd want him to be, he knows where he's supposed to be, and he's not going to hurt you that badly.
No, I agree. I mean, I don't think it's a move that decides their, you know, their title chances one way or another. It's a guy that gives them size inside to go in and help them play against bigger teams if and when that comes. David, last thing before we let you go, you look at this roster. Assuming J.R. Smith comes back, LeBron and then really re-signs, you know, Dele goes to Milwaukee. Is this team better or worse on paper than the Cavs entering last season?
Ooh, that's a good question. Entering last season, you say?
Well, okay, but you know, that's not really fair because they got Channing Frye and stuff. Let's say the team that won the finals.
I'd say they're probably pretty similar. I could get a lot of hate for this, but I think Dunleavy and Delly are pretty similar. I actually, I think Delly, or I think Dunleavy is a little bit more versatile in terms of he can spend a little bit more time guarding fours and not, completely kill you. That being said, it was nice to be able to put Delly on some ones, even while LeBron was sort of really the point guard and Delly was playing some twos on those bench units. So, I think the big difference heading into this year from last year is simply that Kyrie's going to be a little bit more healthy, and that you're not going into the season starting a banged up Timofey Mozgov. So you've got Tristan Thompson ingrained as the starter, who should be healthy, and you have a much more healthy Kyrie Irving. And so I think the I'm hoping that the ups and downs are not quite as pronounced, for this season.
Yeah, I kind of think that's the case. I also think we're going to see LeBron coast for a while. Like, I really think that's sort of
He can
inevitable.
take January off. He can take January.
LeBron can coach with Ty Lue. Him and Ty Lue can co-coach for a month, and we'll just see what happens. But I mean, I think they're headed in a really good situation. I think we can get to, we this needs to be discussed in another podcast, I think, but I think a lot of the pressure is off. They won the title. Kevin Love played big in Game 7. We definitely are going to do some finals retrospectives coming up, but I think next season's sort of a whole different book for this era of Cavs basketball, this second LeBron run. I really think it's sort of a new chapter, like a fully new chapter that I think a lot of things are going to play out differently next year and just sort of feel differently, and I'm kind of excited to see how that happens. It's going to be interesting for sure because you have LeBron James. Things are always interesting, and it's going to be exciting, but David, thank you for coming on. You can, guys, listeners out there, you can find, guys or gals, you can find David on Twitter at David Zavac. That's DavidZavac on Twitter. You can find me on Twitter at CWM Writes. Right now, Locked On Cavaliers is only on audioboom.com. We will be on iTunes and Stitcher soon, as I mentioned at the top of the show. But that's just going to take some time because we had to actually record some podcasts to get that happening. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at Locked On Cavs. If you have questions, concerns, you have critiques for me, which I very much appreciate, you can email us at lockedoncavs@gmail.com. And again, I'm really excited to host this podcast. It's going to be fun. Our next episode is going to be a summer league look back with FDS's Ryan Morton. He spent way too much time in Vegas, and he's going to give us a lot of good information on Kay Felder and Jordan McRae. David, thank you again for coming on the show.
Hey, no problem. Have a good night.
You too. Napa Know
How. It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa Know How. Napa Know How. At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.